Welcome to Church Media HQ. I'm Church Media HQ contributor Jeremy Linentine. And as we begin this episode, I want to remind you to subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. Our podcast is available on both Apple and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify and many other platforms. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if you happen to be watching on YouTube or Facebook, take a moment to like this video, which helps the content get seen by other church leaders like yourself. Lastly, you'd be truly awesome if you could leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. And by rating and reviewing, you're again going to help other church leaders like yourself discover this valuable content. Now let's get ready for today's conversation with myself and the creator of Church Media HQ, Luke Clayton. Okay, so Friend Day is on May the 2nd. So it's four Sundays after Easter, right? Easter being April 4th this year. So it's a full month, which makes me feel like I wish it was 5 or 6 weeks out at least. But that's the problem, is and then that Mother's Day is kind of hugging you in there that next week. So you are kind of cramped. So
yeah. So well, what's your benefit of having it there? Is it the time of year, or is it more about the nature of the event itself? You know,
the nature of the event itself is that, well, like, spring is a good growth time. Now, I've heard a lot that churches grow more in the spring than they do in the fall, because things are coming back and whatever else. I don't tend to agree with that, because, and obviously,
yeah, me neither.
Look on your face, you don't agree with that at all.
That sounds way off.
Because there's something about going back to school that it reverts people back to, because the first of the year, like, oh, New Year's resolutions or whatever, people don't get into church then. It's when your schedule actually changes that it prompts you, like, I should be a better person. So I think that coming into the fall, the weather's still good, right? Most parts of the country, September. Mm-hmm. That's the time when you're going to get people that are like, yeah, you know, we should get the family in church this year, new school year, new us kind of thing. So, but just the nature of Friend Day, just simply like, hey, anyone who's your friend, it could be any person, coworker, someone on the block, whatever else, invite them to come with you. We tend to see like a each one bring one kind of thing, that it works really, really well. Now, if I could get that marketing maybe inside of Easter, then maybe just there's one spring day. I really think I would tell churches, I'm sort of a hypocrite, I would tell churches, have one big day. I think you and me have talked about this, per season, right? Is this your formula? You have one in the spring, which would be Easter. You have one in the summer. It's up to you. A lot of churches do different stuff in the summer. You have one in the fall, and then Christmas is already set. So it's like Easter and Christmas have already set for you, those two seasons. So really, you just need to figure out what you're going to do for your summer and your fall. And there's a case to be made for a lot of different things in that regard.
Well, it's like we've said before, I think we're starting to see, because I have started to, and anybody who's been listening for a while, maybe they noticed this, but I have started to even shift my mentality of, well, instead of making it about big events, instead of making your outreach about big events, make it about more or less campaigns. That would be the marketing term, is kind of, and I guess from a, which we've talked about the value of it. That's what a sermon series can bring, such value in your marketing, because, you know, if you've got a 4 to 6 week series, well, now people are motivated to continue coming back, and to stay connected with you. And, you know, it's like we said, man, whenever you do the one big event approach, well, then, man, what happens if you have someone who really, really wants to come, but they just can't? Like, that, oh, well, yeah, I already have something going that day or whatever. And then when you take that campaign approach, things are, you kind of get more of a, the opportunities are greater, I guess I should say, for your community.
One of the things that I think would be interesting is, you know, if you want to call it this way or whatever else, is, you know, you kind of have organic and inorganic days, right? So you've talked about Mother's Day as being one that you don't really have to work that hard for, but everybody wants to kind of go to church for mom, you know, do it for mom kind of thing. And I think you're definitely right about that, that there's some days, we see this in the summer. We have a summer series that we do every year, and it's just like people enjoy, you don't have to beat them over the head to invite someone to it. They just enjoy it. And I suppose that would be what would make it, you know, inorganic, is it just happens without you having to prompt it a whole lot, which would be great if everything was like that. But, you know, obviously it's not. So, you know, there is value to having, I think, 4 organic days that you're really planned and you're working very hard towards, and then finding some events that really work for your people. You know, every church has a little bit of a different personality. And of course, your part of the country is going to dictate how late into the year you can do outdoor events, you know, or, you know, if you have facilities, if you have a gym, you know, or if you have, you know, open space or whatever. Some churches are limited in how much space they have. Here, we don't have a gym. It just constantly kills us. We have to always find workarounds. So that's the struggle, but it makes all of us a little bit unique in the things that we can do. So it's not a one size fits all, but I think there's some really good outlines, and not trying to have too many organic days, because it really takes a lot longer than you think to get your people behind, like motivated and informed, and then them getting out. It takes like 3 or 4 weeks just for you to answer all the questions for people already in your church, and then a couple weeks for them to invite people to come to church. So it just takes forever.
This then would be my question then. What would you see any value to adding, you know, something like a friend day, so that it's not stacked up, you know, right behind Easter, right, you know, because right now, like you said, it's kind of wedged between Easter and Mother's Day. Would your church have any benefit from, you know, maybe moving that friend day to the fall, and, you know, maybe making it part of an outreach campaign there?
I think that we would. You had talked one other time about, you know, having consecutive weeks of having different emphasis. The difficult thing is that for me, and I mean, maybe there's a simple workaround or whatever, but I guess if you were going to do, let's say that we move it to the fall, and let's say you had three Sundays in September, whatever, where you're doing something every week, I guess you would just package it all as one on one flyer, one invite card, whatever, right? And then just be resigned to the fact you're going to spend a lot of money that month as far as securing stuff and food or whatever else you're going to do. But maybe that would work a whole lot better for people to invite to that way. It might also just wear your people out. I don't know. A lot of these events are after church. I mean, I don't know if you've had any experience about that. But if a church does a multi-week campaign like that, and those events, you know, spill out into Sunday afternoon, or, you know, you're asking your people in outreach, or maybe like a bus ministry, or, you know, whatever, maybe a transportation ministry, to work really, really hard, you know, can people do that? I don't know. But I think that it's a creative way to get it there. It really is. It's a bad placement for us, having it in the spring, and it's something we're hanging on to because of tradition. But I would like to try to push Mother's Day a little bit more, and with Friend Day stacked, wedged in there between Easter and Mother's Day, it doesn't happen. So that means that, I guess one thing that this is a good point to bring up, there's always trade-offs when you're talking about ministry and people. It's a zero-sum game. So people can only put so much energy into so many different things. And a lot of churches, sometimes including our own, are just way too busy trying to do too many different things, and your quality suffers, and people just can't get on board with it as much as we think that they can, because we're here 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and they're not. They attend here, and they work jobs somewhere else, and they've got their own life and responsibilities. But
well, and something, too, that, and this kind of leads to the next thing I was going to bring up here. When it comes to those extracurricular things, if you will, at what point are we doing, you know, is the church doing too much? Because I think this is kind of the mentality that existed. I don't really know when it would have started, But we definitely saw this rise in, you know, kind of, I guess it kind of would have been probably like this before my time, but, you know, back in the 80s, early 90s, we kind of saw that moral majority, you know, kicking in America, you know, the Reagan years, all of that. And that really, and even, I guess we could kind of even go back to some of the 70s when maybe that movement kind of started. And so what you see is churches becoming the almost like community centers, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that, and that's awesome. And I think it'd be cool to see more of that today. But in the process, I think the church kind of positioned itself as we've got to provide an alternative for everything. So, for example, and I'm not saying I'm against this, but it's just the first thing that comes to mind. I think about sports programs. So I know several churches out there that have, you know, Little League. I don't know if your church does, but they basically host these Little League, you know, programs. And so they, you know, they have, on the one hand, it's a great community outreach. But on the other hand, it's a lot of, it's very resource intensive. It takes up a lot of time on your calendar. And the problem, and this is the problem for any of it, is it can become really self-serving in terms of, well, now our focus kind of becomes about, well, we got people that go to our church because they love our kids, they love our sports programs, and their kids play all the sports. And, you know, if we were to shut that down or minimize that, we might lose people. Well, you know, that to me, that can definitely lend to the danger of, well, now your church is kind of existing to serve itself rather than existing to reach its community. Like I said, none of this is completely 100% true across the board. It's just, you know, kind of the example there. So I guess my question for you is, and kind of what we can discuss here is, you know, where is, I guess there's probably no definitive answer here, but where is kind of that line between, okay, we've got the, what's the main stuff we're doing, you know, church outreach, and then all the programs that originally maybe they were created to complement, you know, the main mission, but now they seem to be becoming, you know, maybe a little bit more trouble than they're worth.
Yeah, and there's successful models like all over the spectrum. So it doesn't help you to really decipher which one you should go with, because there's like a, there are churches, we could name names, but that are like very minimalist, and they're just saying, okay, cut everything out, and we're only going to do these three things. That's it. That's all that we do. And if it doesn't fit, then we just don't do it, no matter what that means. And then you have, there's a church in New York called, and they also started one at a campus in Los Angeles. It's called the Dream Center. And the part of town that they're in, I'm not sure if you're familiar with their story or not. The part of town they're in New York is very, it's like high crime, you know, low income, not a lot of opportunities and stuff. So they don't have a school at their church, but they have these pretty big facilities and stuff. And so they open it up throughout the whole week, and they have like a laundromat in one of their resource buildings at the church, so that the folks there, a lot of them don't have that resource. They don't have to go to a crime infested, you know, laundromat. They just come and they do it at the church. They know they're safe and secure. They badge in, or what, they have someone that works there, lets them in. Then they also have like workout. They have a gym there, like Zumba and yoga classes and all these other things, just to give someone a safe place to go to, because it's not currently being provided by the city. And so they do that in both of their locations because of where they're at. So I guess you have to determine for you and your church. This is the great part about being autonomous and an independent church. You can do what you believe is best for your church. Absolutely. Right? I think a couple guidelines that would apply is this, though. First, I don't think that you, as you offer more and more of these things, I think that you need to stop pressuring people to do all the things. You know, you can't push everyone to go to all of these services, right? Plus, like, let's say, be involved in this ministry and a kids soccer league and in, you know, Reformers Unanimous or addictions program you have. And only so many people can do so many things. And if you ask them to do more things, you're right, it's going to take away from the main mission. So yeah. What would you rather have them do? So there's a lot of things you can offer, but it doesn't mean that you have to constantly push it from your pulpit. And so maybe, like, let's say a kids soccer league or whatever would be a hook in the water to try to get people who are not currently at your church, right, warm or familiar or coming to your church. And we don't have one yet. We've thought about starting one for like soccer, for example. It's big out here. because a lot of our people already have their kids in a soccer league. So what it would do is it would allow us to be able to control the times and to sort of help that for them to not be hindered in coming to church. Soccer leagues out here are notorious for being on the whole weekend, you know, on Sunday as well. So it would allow their kids to be involved in that, which is what parents want. You know, we want, every parent wants the same basic things. We want our kids to be in enjoyable things and have opportunities that we didn't have when we were growing up and so on and so forth. And so it, it allows you to control the schedule. So I think when you think through it, sometimes it makes sense for your congregation and sometimes it doesn't. But so the first thing is don't push everybody to do all the things. Just offer them and let people go where they think, believe God wants them. And then the second thing is, I think that you've got to be willing to shut down, close things that are not working or hindering your main missions. And as soon as you do that, I guarantee you, if you had a like a women's crocheting group that met once a month and you need to shut that down, you're going to have two or three people that get upset with you that you shut that thing down, even though you know you need to. So you just got to do it and be brave in the face of that. Every decision you get, you make is going to be criticized from one end of the spectrum.
Of course.
And so you just have to be willing to shut down things that don't work, taking you away from the main mission, or sucking up too many resources, time, and money from other people. So I think those are two guiding principles that you could do. So in that regard, like what you'll always say on this podcast, Luke, is try something, right? If you don't know whether you should or not, it's not, you know, just try it. You can always shut it down and just communicate to people why. And, you know, go forward.
Yeah. And there's a couple other things too, that I would say maybe supplemental to what you already brought up is, so first of all, I think it's very beneficial to, I'm trying to figure out a way to word this. So for example, if you are willing to kind of, push the control factor, you know, deeper into your, you know, church, you know, down to the level of not, not even beyond your staff, like to just volunteers and people that want to get involved, then, you know, then you have a little bit more flexibility and a little bit more, well, just in general resource and actual manpower to do these extra things. Because again, the problem that, that I've seen is that they, well, they become, if you will, centrally controlled by the leadership at the church and whatever, and it becomes a more of a church staff and whatever run thing, and so then it's just like, well, your staff, your there's a big chunk of your budget obviously is going to these extra things. You know, like I said, it's kind of more controlled from the top down. So I think if you can, you know, kind of adjust your philosophy and your model to say, well, yeah, we're going to allow these extra programs, but we're going to basically have that something that is run and maintained by volunteers and by, you know, people that, you know, they want to do that, they want to get involved. And whatever, and then you just kind of take the hands-off approach. Obviously, if something gets out of control or becomes countercultural to your mission, okay, yeah, you've got to do something about that. But I think that's huge. Like we were, I was thinking of one church, a big church, that they do a lot of the stuff we're talking about, but the way that they do it is through their small group ministry, and so they have, you know. Basically, they also have the model, and this, again, we could talk about this at some point. This is a debatable model. Some people like this, some people don't. But they have the ministry that they, or the philosophy that basically, not anyone, I shouldn't say anyone, but virtually anyone who wants to start a small group can. And they're going to allow them to start a small group and whatever, and kind of empower them to do that. And so some of the ministries they have are, you know, their small groups, if you will, are, you know, something about sports. You know, people get together, like men get together and play a game of pickup basketball or flag football or something. So I think that's one thing is if you're cool with like pushing that, like I said, that power down and that authority deeper into your church and into your, specifically down to your volunteers, and you can give them the parameters and everything to make it happen, and it becomes something that's not centrally controlled, and taking away from your time and what is important, then go for it. And then the other thing I would say, and you kind of talk about this, is I think a lot of it comes down to creating a culture where you don't really have these sacred cows, where, okay, we're up for trying anything new. But you know, we're also not going to hold on to anything. And if it's something that's not effective or something that is becoming distracting, more than it is, and it's hurting us more than it's helping us, then we're going to cut it. And that goes into the culture of your church, you know, is breeding that. And that's easier said than done. So, yeah, it's like I said, it's not like I think all of it is wrong and bad and, but it can be a distraction and it can be a hindrance.
Right. And I think it's actually a biblical precedent because we always think of, man, if the church is growing, then that means that what are we starting? What's new? What is the new ministry that we're taking off with or whatever? But one of the big things that the Bible talks about a lot is pruning, right? And what is pruning? Yeah. It's cutting away non-essentials so that essential growth can mm-hmm. happen. And in a church, as long as you're determined that, okay, you know, the preaching of God's word, you know, the teaching of that is primary. Reaching out to people with the gospel, that's primary, you know, let's say missions, right? You know, in this country and out of this country, whatever, that's primary. As long as you're not cutting out one of those things, those are essentials, that will kill. But these other things, they're non-essentials. But I think that sometimes we as church staff, for example, if you're listening to this, your church staff, we get caught up in holding on to sacred cows, even though when we really talk it through, we know that something's not working. It hasn't worked. And let's say it is taking people away from the main goal of the church. But we can get over that. A lot of times I think that we're just scared of those two or three people that will come to us and be upset that we took away something that they liked or that they thought was valuable. What's always funny to me is someone will come to you and be upset that you took away something or canceled it. And then you look and they didn't even go to it. They didn't even attend it. They didn't mm-hmm. even have anything invested in it. They just yeah. didn't like that you were canceling something. Right. Yeah. And so I think that we have to be willing. That's the harder part, is just being willing to just communicate. And so proactively getting ahead of that, I think quite often you should talk to your church about, hey, here's what's essential to us. Some other stuff may come and go, you know, just kind of have that culture of like, we're always going to be changing and morphing, not our key elements and principles. In the, you know, we find in the Bible, but these other programs and services, what we do, maybe how we ran this or whatever, that can come and go and it's okay. And that way people understand that, like, yeah, if we had to kill this thing, it's all right. It's okay. Cause we already understand. We all agreed on what those things that are important to us that we are unwilling to sacrifice. And then you can kind of create that culture of letting stuff go because, man, so many opinions in a church, you can't let anything go without yeah. someone being upset. But
yeah.
Let me ask you this, if you're willing to pivot. Luke, do you have any of things of, we talked about organic and inorganic. So if you're having a couple of organic big days a year, let's call it four again, one for every season. But then inorganic, and we'll define that as just things that really create excitement and buzz and take off on their own without you having to push them a lot, without you having to create a flyer and a blitz campaign and really dog people to get their friends and family to come. What are some things that maybe you have seen? We have a couple of examples. The reason I bring this up is in the last 2 years, we've been willing to try things at our church that, as far as events, really focused on just fun events for the family, things that are easy to invite people to. People like them. They talk about them. You know, they push it along or whatever. But there are things that we hadn't previously done before. And coming into the pandemic, I think we've taken the opportunity to just say, like, we're willing to try something. We're willing to try a lot of different mm-hmm. things. And some of these things that we're now doing were born out of not being able to meet together, which I think is probably the case for a lot of people listening, and that's exciting. So if you know of any of those things that can catch on pretty easily, and maybe like why that happens, because you talked about Mother's Day, so starting there, what's the inorganic big buzz behind Mother's Day at church that you like don't really see with Father's Day as much?
Well, thanks again for joining us right here at Church Media HQ. Until next time, I want to remind you, as always, you know what I'm going to say. In fact, you need to be the one saying it back to me. You know what it's time for. It's time that you try something new. Why? Well, because it is so much better to fail at trying the incredible than it is to succeed at doing just the average. We'll see you next time right here on Church Media HQ.